All right, everyone, welcome back. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com, Uncrowned, Yahoo Sports, all that good stuff. We're back from our summer hiatus. Chris, I haven't talked to you in like 2 weeks. I took a nice little summer break. It was much needed. I was actually still working because the boxing schedule never stops. I was in Orlando for the MVP card. Still monitoring the boxing world. We will get to a lot of topics today, all the things we missed. Missed you, Chris. That's what's most important. How are you?
I'm here. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't stop working either because boxing does not sleep on this side of the, country, bottom southern part.
Hemisphere?
You know, we're yeah, I guess so. It's not quite the southern hemisphere, but we're the southern part of the country. But yeah, we've been busy down here. It's a big month for Pro Box TV. We're starting that membership. So I've been active in the studio and posting and reposting. So the work never stops.
I go to the boxing scene website. It's your giant face with $5 next to it.
Yeah, just $5. I can be bought.
$5 for Chris Algieri's services. Not bad.
We're looking for volume. You know, we're not looking for the big high dollar viewership. We're looking for the.
It's a good deal.
The common man. No, but, you know, boxing is it should be. Boxing is a poor man's sport. I'm not saying it's a poor man's, you know, to be a fan, but like it should be a low barrier to entry, and that's kind of the idea.
Also, I've seen you on Instagram over the last couple of weeks, gloves on, throwing hands in the gym. So something you want to tell us?
Nah, I've just been working with the kids over at Boca PAL. We've had a resurgence over here at the PAL. You know, PALs are falling off, and amateur boxing's falling off, and I'm just trying to get more involved. I've been speaking with USA Boxing about potentially working with them, trying to get some things going with the amateur programs. And again, there's been an influx down here in Boca, so like the police are actually really helping us. Like PAL means Police Athletic League, so you're supposed to have help from the police.
We had basketball ones here in Long Island.
And it's usually, you know, it's officers that help. So the officers are finally starting to help over here. Not finally, but once again are starting to help. We've had a big influx of kids. So we have a bunch of studs that are getting ready to train. So I've been going down there whenever I can to work with them, donating some gear, buying some stuff, trying to build up the stars of tomorrow.
All right. So this is a you're doing good in the community. This isn't for your personal comeback into the boxing world.
No, this is just a give back to the community, not a comeback. Give back, not comeback.
Love that. What else is going on? I was in Orlando for the MVPW card. That was a fun one. So Tam Thibodeau.
She's good. I like her, man. She's tough. Very good.
Maybe she'll fight Clarissa Shields, who fights this weekend down the road. Dina Thorsland, the Nordic.
Wow. Non-stop.
Oh, my goodness.
Non-stop. She's always been good. Don't get me wrong. She's always been good. But I didn't expect that kind of performance because Shanika's been on a hell of a run lately. But Dina went out and showed out.
I was absolutely taken back by that performance. Like, throws punches and bunches. Like, comes at you like kind of Pacquiao. Like,
yeah.
Like, comes at you in a straight line by throw. But like, and she's got these short little arms. That was a fun one.
She's a bit of a throwback because she's like the generation right before the ladies right now. And there was a lot of that. Who was the fighter who gave Katie Taylor a ton of trouble? Tall, long
Pursoon?
Fighter.
Pursoon?
Yes. Yes. Similar type style. Just aggressive, throws a million punches. That was what won the day in you know, before the ladies of today who are really, really sharp. The ladies today are like sharp counterpunchers. They set things up.
Volume.
Yeah, right before us it was
right
volume.
From even the opening bell.
But even Amanda Serrano, she's a volume puncher. She just hits really hard. Like, so that generation right before the ladies we have today, that's what won the day back then. But Katie Taylor was like the transition from volume to being the smart transition that we're seeing now.
Katie Taylor fights in Ireland, I believe in September, her final fight. Amanda Serrano going for the knockout record next weekend in San Diego, which I'm headed out to. The first ever championship fight on TikTok Live, and I'm hosting it.
That's awesome. And it's in San Diego. San Diego's, that's one of my favorite cities.
It's in Pechanga, not exactly San Diego. We're going to be driving about 35 minutes, 40 minutes.
Dude, you're in Long Island. 35 minutes is like to go get
that's nothing.
Groceries.
That's nothing. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that TikTok event. Like, we've got some really interesting guests planned. I'll just leave it at that. You'll see soon. Like,
I can't even
guests
imagine.
You would never think of in the million years to be joining me on a watch party TikTok and MVP, as they do. What else is going on in the box? We haven't got your thoughts on Keyshawn Davis. I got Najee's thoughts. He guest hosted our last episode on the heels of Keyshawn declining the $2.13 million purse bid, which would have been the highest payday by over $1 million that he's ever had, to not fight Devin Haney. I know you've just been stewing on this one. What was your reaction to this before we move on?
I'm not just going to attack Keyshawn. Obviously, Keyshawn's the guy in the news right now, but this is this generation. These guys talk and then don't fight. It's crazy. I don't think that fight was ever, I don't think he ever wanted that fight with Devin. And you went on a whole tour calling the man out, Debo this, where's Debo, making all these videos back and forth. You get the opportunity.
You went to the Friday house.
Yeah, bro. And then you get the opportunity. $3 million wasn't enough. You push it back to purse bid. You know, the businessman obviously made a poor business decision on that one. Even Bob's like, I don't know what this kid's doing. Bob Arum.
I'm perplexed.
Yeah, that's it. When Bob says that, because, you know, Bob's a consummate promoter. He's always pushing his guys. Even when he gets honest and he's like, I don't even know what's going on here. It tells you things are not good in the hood. But it's just, listen, this generation's weird. It's such a weird guys. The way they move, I don't understand it. Trying to be tough, like tough guys fight. Tough guys call each other out and they fight. They fight when they see each other. They fight on site. On site's not a thing anymore. But also, it's like they got so many layers to protect them from actually fighting. Guys, you can literally call anyone out anytime. It doesn't mean anything. Back in the day, who was that? Bernard said, anybody calls me out, I'm fighting them. He's fighting them. Like, and Bernard was multi-million dollar fighter, and he still lived by that. We don't have that anymore. This generation, I think Tim Bradley's been saying, this generation's soft. I have to agree. The Twitter fingers just ain't it. We got to get back to boxing, man.
It's very strange, and there's been a lot of fallout. It's obviously happened like 2 weeks ago, so there's been a lot of fallout. He's been posting stuff on socials with the businessman hashtag. Comments are on. Comments are bad.
Bad.
What kind of businessman are you? Like, close down the business. If you're the businessman, then like...
Going out of business sale.
Exactly. Now I've heard some things where like Top Rank doesn't owe him a fight until next May. So they can freeze him out. They have to be pissed off. I don't have to hit up anyone at Top Rank to get their official feelings on how they feel about Keyshawn. They have to be just at their wit's end with this guy. Because this is not just the first misstep. You know, we're talking about missing weight, marijuana. We're talking about what happened in Norfolk where he blew up the whole event, got into a fight in the backstage. Like, we're talking about a multiple offender here.
When he's good, he's great. When he's bad, he's terrible. Bob loves him. He's like, oh, that's our future star. And then now he's like, I'm perplexed. I don't know what's going on. Like, yeah, it's with Keyshawn, it seems like it's always two steps forward, maybe three back, you know, because he really is not really making that much ground. He did, and then he just gets so much bad PR for himself, you know, each time out, or maybe it's three steps forward, two steps back. I don't know. Is he still inching forward? Doesn't really seem like it. He has stalled himself. And for people at home who don't know how contracts work, if you turn down a fight, that can count as a fight that was owed to you by the promoter. So that's why when Dan says they don't owe him a fight until next year, because essentially that fight was a deal. It was done. It was offered. It was an offer by Top Rank initially. He turned it down, obviously, ultimately, after the purse bid. So now that counts for Top Rank's offering. They don't owe him until, you know, the following year. I don't know what Top Rank is going to do about that, because he is a star and we do want him fighting and they want him fighting as well. But I don't know. I think they got to do a little bit of a rebuild in terms of PR.
Oh, big time. Once again, like that. And like, where is he going to go from here? Like, enjoy fighting Frank Martin on like a Top Rank card for like $300,000.
Also not an easy fight. It's also not an easy fight. Not Frank Martin's good.
$2 million to fight Haney. Like, I don't know. He's not going for a title shot. He's not going to be handed a title shot anytime soon at 147, that's for sure. Does he go back to stay at 140? There's a lot of things with Keyshawn, and it's not good. I was hearing, like, oh, maybe he wants to go to Zuffa. You know, maybe this is a way for him to stall out, but he's going to have to really wait then, because the Top Rank's not just going to let him out of this contract. He's not like it's Shakur where he became a free agent, or Teofimo where he became a free agent. Like, there were many, many fights on the Keyshawn Davis contract with Top Rank. So the Zuffa theory, I think, is he got some legs. Maybe he does want to join Zuffa to join his buddy Shakur, but I don't. That's not happening anytime soon, unless he wants to wait until he's 30, because he's 27. He's not a kid.
The thing with Zuffa is, and I get it, because I've been in, like you said, I've been wearing gloves lately. I've been in gyms lately. I've been in multiple gyms down here. My nephew was down here for a couple weeks, so we were traveling around getting him sparring. And I'm talking to certain guys and some former pros, some guys, pretty solid guys. They're asking me, "Oh, I'm thinking about doing Zuffa." They go, first of all, they go, "What do you think about Zuffa?" And I'm just like, "Hey, you know, it's the initial first year, we're trying to figure things out." He's like, "Do you think I should? I'm thinking about doing it." I go, "Absolutely." I'm like, "How old are you? You're over 35 years old? Absolutely. Go get the money."
Geez.
Yeah. So I'm like, "Yeah, go fight." Yeah, perfect.
Like making their debut or like guys that have been around?
No. I'm talking about a guy with 25 pro fights and a former South American Olympian. A good fighter. But like guys like that, I'm like, "Yeah, absolutely. Go and fight. Like, you know, go get paid. Go get treated well." But then a guy like Keyshawn, who, as good as he is, hasn't done all that much. That's not the right move for a guy like that. Even Hitchens, I'm kind of like, you could have. There were some really big fights for your career wise you could have accomplished before that. A guy like Shakur, because he's done so much, I get it. He's even said it. He's like, I'm a guy. I'm probably going to retire early because my skills are based on my reactions, and those are the first things to go. So I'm not going to be one of those guys who's fighting for a long time. So like for him, it's like he's already a 4-division world champion. He beat Teofimo Lopez in a virtuoso performance, which is a big, big win. He hasn't got the biggest fights that he wants or deserves, and this might put him out of the running for that for a little bit. But I understand, like, he's already got a stellar career, Olympian, medalist. He's got all that. But Keyshawn, though, like, you needed these big fights. Hitchens, he needed that Duarte fight. He needed those kinds of fights. And now you go over there, and you're handicapping yourself a bit in terms of what you're able to accomplish during your prime years. But
yeah, it isn't, you know, over there too. You said over there.
It's over there.
Over there now.
It's over
we
there.
We have that still. Like, we thought everyone under the DAZN banner, all the promotions pretty much under DAZN, right? We're done with outside of the streets. And then it's like, not so fast. There's that street over there. See it in the distance? That's Zuffa.
And different block.
It's still a chasm.
Like, chasm.
Like that word. Fuck.
All right. It's spelled chasm, but
it's how you pronounce it. Chasm.
Chasm.
All right. There's a chasm out there, and the chasm is there's a war going on between Yahoo.
There's a war between
Zuffa, mm-hmm. Paramount, DAZN, and Shakur is on that side. Devin Haney, fallout of and all of this is still looking for an opponent. It's August 13th. Devin Haney hasn't fought this year. Devin Haney doesn't have an opponent. Liam Paro,
I like that fight.
IBF champion, says that Devin Haney is ducking me. He priced himself out. Jack Catterall is in the mix, who's been like a WBO interim, I believe. Not the mandatory, because that would have been Keyshawn. Catterall in the mix. I don't know where Haney goes from here, but we got to get this guy in the ring. Paro, unification would be a nice fight.
Paro's the fight. I don't know. I mean, reports are that he priced himself out. Which I don't know.
So tired of this.
Yeah, exactly. Again, this is where I'm not calling any single guys out because it's too often. It's just generation. I don't know. Liam doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. He fights on the road. You know, like, he's willing to take tough fights. He said it himself. So I don't know how true those reports are. I don't know if maybe, you know, priced out in terms of by whose take. By which side are you pricing yourself out on? Like,
bro, I can't even.
Is that Bill going like, "Ah, that guy doesn't deserve that much. Let's go attract Catterall so Liam thinks that there's a trouble. This fight might fall through, and then he'll come down in price." Maybe there's a lot of ways to negotiate these kind of situations. It does muddy the waters. I say it all the time. Boxing is the best sport in the world. It's the worst business. Now we're seeing the business side of it, how ugly it can be. But Liam powers the fight. It's a unification. Liam's good. He deserves it. Does he beat Devin? Probably not. I would favor Devin heavily. I think everyone would. But Catterall also deserving, but he's always like the deserving guy by default because right. he's always there. He's always willing to fight anybody. He doesn't really get his own shots. He steps in for people. And this is one of those situations, but he's just not a very exciting guy.
And so he doesn't, like, Haney, doesn't Catterall move the needle. Lighting that ring on fire.
Not at all.
Haney Catterall is not something I have to see. Paro,
Haney, Paro's a, it's a good least, fight.
It's that Paro's a little more of an exciting guy, a little more, will take a little more risks. The Catterall Haney is going to be a complete tactical chess match. Catterall has shown power.
With
in
zero
those
buzz, though, Dan. No buzz.
Zero buzz.
Devin's looking for
Paro
buzz.
Paro doesn't have much buzz either, but at least it's unification.
It'll have some because you got Australia. Australia is like a huge market right now. It's
well,
really
think about
on fire.
This too. If, oh my God, yeah. I mean, even fire. Women's boxing. We had like three women's fire. Fighters from Australia on the last
Devin's
card.
Been there too. Devin, go back there. If I'm Devin, I'd go back there again.
It'd be a lot for him to do that. If Haney fights Paro in Australia, then you're just talking about how this era is soft. Crown the guy. Crown him once again. Devin Haney, you're that guy. But I think he'd do it here. You would think. But I don't know what's going to happen.
You know, Liam, I think they what happened? They won the purse bid. That's why they did the title fight for Crocker down there, right? I think that was a purse bid situation. But listen, he went to Puerto Rico to fight Matias. He went into the Lion's Den for that one to upset Matias and win that title. So that was super impressive. So I tip my hat to Paro all the time because of that. Even when he came to New York and knocked out Montana Love. Miami? Whatever.
Montana Love.
Ohio, regardless, he came over here. He came over here as an opponent for Montana Love, and he busted his ass. So Liam Paro's legit. I think he would be deserving of this fight. I think it's actually a good fight. I think we'd like to see tactically how Haney would handle that. Haney's very good at dealing with southpaws. But Paro's a little bit of a tricky southpaw, and he's got some power. So that's the fight. I hope that we do get that, since we're not obviously getting the fight we really wanted, which was Keyshawn and Haney. And I feel stupid because we got so excited about this 2 weeks ago when we were talking about it. And of course, this doesn't happen.
I didn't see this coming, though. Like, I didn't see it going to purse bid number one. It's like, I didn't see that. I didn't see them having a purse bid. Like,
did you see Bill say that there was another million for Keyshawn and he could have found it? Like, did you hear
underneath
did you see that?
The sock draw? Where?
God, sorry. Let me tell everybody this too. As someone who's been on the other side, behind the curtain, the money that we hear is not real. It's different. It could be higher. It could be lower. But there's always more money. There's always more money to find.
There's money in the banana stand,
guys. There's always more money to find. If a fight really wants, if they really want to make a fight happen, like for example, they really want like. Bob said it in the press conference after Ruslan. I was the only option for Pacquiao. They needed me. I knew that. I held out. Found more money. A lot more money. I was able to negotiate that because I knew of where I was. There's always more money, guys. There's
but
always
the
more money.
The purse bid kind of limit. It's just like cut and dry. It's like here's
no,
the money.
No, the purse bid F's things up.
Yeah, it prevents more money to be thrown in.
Yeah. But
like if you don't accept that. If you don't accept the fight, which Keyshawn didn't, there isn't like, all right, let's go back to it. WBO is like, all right, we're moving on. We're taking him out of that ranking, and we'll find another one.
But
or we'll move on to a voluntary defense for him.
This is not the first time. If you follow Dan Raphael, he said this. This was a bit of a mock purse bid. This was already set. There's only two bidders, and one of them was
DAZN has all the networks. They're not going to have them. They're not going to have promoters driving up the price for the network that's going to be buying it. Like
the,
that. Like
the deal was done. The deal was done. That's why you had Teofimo Lopez. He threw out what? $1 million, $1.5 million. And then you had Top Rank, who threw out 8 point whatever. So the deal was already done. It was already established. Everybody knew what they were getting. Devin knew what he was getting from both Top Rank and DAZN because he has a deal on top of that. And Keyshawn had his money. But there's other monies. There's other monies to find if you really want to.
What if he just wins and how his life could change? What if
not for nothing. $3 million is a good payday.
I think it was two, but yeah.
No. Three. For the initial.
The initial was three. That's another part that's just so aggravating and it's just so mind-numbing. And like why, for a lot of times, we don't know exactly what goes on in negotiations and fans take sides without knowing the full facts. I can't believe this guy did this when he didn't even do that behind closed doors. But for this scenario, we knew all the numbers. Like him turning down $3 million to only go to purse bid to get $2 million and turn that down, It's unfathomable. It's one of the biggest missteps of the last 20 years in boxing in terms of business-wise, in terms of like pricing yourself out or not taking
the fight. You could just tell he didn't want the fight.
Why did he do all those stupid-ass videos?
Because he thought he was behind the Twitter wall, and guys call guys out all the time, and their fights never even come close to happening. I think this might have been one like it started getting really close, being like, all right, we're already past the threshold that people want
like,
this.
Did he get bad advice? Like, Jay Prince has a pretty good track record. I wonder if he got bad advice. Does he think he can get this fight in a couple years? Does he think he's not ready?
We saw Tio do this a year ago against Haney too, by the way. There was a lot of money on the line for that. That fight was this close. And these guys
down Haney to fight Shakur and get 12-0'd.
Yeah, and he was going to make more money for Haney, from what I understand.
And now he's back with his own Tio with a big time contract. I don't even want to like get into the Benavidez stuff next because I need to like cleanse the palate from what we just said. So I'll get to the heavyweight news. Some other stuff that happened a while.
Some good heavyweight news.
Yeah, let's start with the good heavyweight news because there's some BS in here too. Daniel Dubois, Fabio Wardley rematch set for October 17th.
Yes.
Just a few months after their first epic clash, which is one of the best heavyweight fights that Frank Warren has ever put on, according to Frank Warren.
Wow.
Do you believe that this is too soon for Fabio Wardley?
We're only going to know when we see the fight. I can't say it. I would have rather him...
Well, let me ask you this. Should have Fabio Wardley taken more time? Should he have taken a tune-up fight, then went to Dubois, or go right to it?
I'm going to speak from my head and then from my heart. My head, yes. Get yourself reset. You know, get a little rebuild. Come back. Maybe Dubois loses the title. You got to fight somebody else. You know, whatever. My heart, fuck. Wardley's the... He is a throwback. I love what he's doing. I love what he's done. I love his whole career. I love it. He's so fun to watch. He fights like the 1980s heavyweights. I was watching, who was I watching? Or was it early 90s? Might have been Bo Holyfield. Just killing each other. I'm like, heavyweights don't fight like this anymore. Where'd these guys go? What happened to these guys? And then I was like, Wardley Dubois was like a early 90s, late 80s heavyweight title fight where both guys are just going for it.
It should have went down the Trump Taj Mahal.
Oh, so good. So good. Heavyweights always, they used to always fight like that. They used to always fight like that.
Yeah, Holyfield, Bo. Like, that was like my first introductions to heavyweight boxing when I was like 8 or 9 years old. I thought every heavyweight fight was like that.
They were Rocky movies. They were Rocky movies.
Second tier. And like guys like, what's his name? Ike Iabuchi.
That was even a little later. I'm thinking guys like Burt Cooper. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Who
was the guy I'm thinking of? Tua? Like a big, yes.
David Tua. That was another one. Baby. David Tua, Haseem Rahman. There was clips of that one. I mean, good God. Just blasting away. Remember Moskayev?
Big
square-headed Russian who knocked Rahman through the ropes. Like, he was another one. Just these guys are in constant wars. The fights were so fun. They were Rocky movies, and we've really gotten away from that because we got these big super heavyweights. But Wardley's not. Wardley fights. He is a big, athletic guy who puts it on the line. He might get ruined in these two fights, which would be a real shame.
That's what I mean. He's 31. He hasn't had much of an amateur career. Didn't take a lot of punishment as doesn't have a lot of miles on the odometer. A meteoric rise to where he is right now, where he was as heavyweight champion, now trying to get it back. Got that going for him.
He's been a world champion in a very good heavyweight era. Like, you got to give him that.
I was going to say, like, yeah, like, it's, we're comparing stuff to the 90s, which when we did our heavyweight tier list, like, the 90s is probably
one of the weaker
70s.
Yeah,
70s number one, 90s two, and like, you could make a case for this most recent era of heavyweights is the third best since the 70s, unless you put 80s. We had Tyson, we had Larry Holmes, but like, it didn't have the. It was a tweener. It was like
Larry was like, he was the ball. He was the king. You know,
mid 80s on 85 on was really nice.
Yeah. Oh, that was the fight, actually. Now that you said it, it was Larry Holmes, old Larry Holmes, fighting Evander Holyfield. And, I mean, Larry's getting his ass whipped at the end of the fight, but he makes it to the end, immediately just throws up like a gallon of fluid out of his mouth. I'm like, this guy's fighting to the very end. He was in his 40s at the time, fighting Evander Holyfield, like rocking and rolling, like killing each other.
Speaking of Foreman, I know you're not really an online guy. You're not on Twitter. I wonder if this reached your desk. Our friend Ade Oladipo is in deep doo-doo.
Oh, no. I like Ade.
He didn't do anything wrong. He just had a horrible take. Mm. He was on a podcast, a BBC Sport podcast, with him, a gentleman that I didn't know, And then Eubank's sister. Never seen her before. And okay. they were talking about marketability of boxers. Mm-hmm. And I think they had like a draft. Like some each person took someone and then stated their case why they're the most marketable fighter. And Ade had Ali, obviously, massively marketable fighter later on in his career and life. Not early on.
Not during his career. He was a very divisive. Hated. Very divisive. He
yeah. Drafted the Dodge.
You're not giving him a Nike deal. That's for
so
sure.
So like they get to like Foreman, and he's so dismissive of Foreman. He says this line like, "Oh, just because you could sell grills, you think you could fight?"
Whoa.
Eubank says, Rumble in the Jungle, Thrill in Manila aren't even top 10 pay-per-views, which is just a crazy statement because like. There wasn't pay-per-views then. Like, 1 billion people watched some of these fights because they were on, like, short, closed circuit, like, cable TV. It was just, like, a very, very misguided type of clunky exercise on a podcast that he thought no one was really going to see. It mixed rounds on Twitter. People are calling for this guy's head. Like, they're acting like it's a scandal. They're like, Adil Libo, break your silence. How dare you? It was just the way you got to watch it. The way he kind of dismissed like Ali.
Yeah.
I mean, excuse me, Foreman. I think it was because he had to dismiss him because he was doing his little like exercise on the pod.
So he's more taking like, his stance, defending his stance rather than actually. Well, regardless, it's a ridiculous take.
It's a crazy take to say to number one that like he's just a guy that sold grills. Number two, like he's. I wouldn't say he was like the most marketable guy, but he was definitely a huge star in the 70s. They thought he was going to kill Ali. He obviously wasn't like the jovial pastor selling grills and Mighty Key brake pads, but like he still was one of the biggest names in sport in the 70s.
Yeah.
Towards the, you know, when he was fighting Ali.
He was the Sonny Liston of that era. And he knocked Joe Frazier's head off. Like he beat him like it was a hammer on a mallet on an anvil. It was ridiculous. He was the scariest guy in the sport at the time. He was Sonny Liston and Mike Tyson. You know, that's what he was. He was the scariest man in the heavyweight division. And then he came back and had a whole second career. And then he became actually very marketable, obviously, which, you know, the girls came out
of. It was kind of funny though. He was looked at though as He got booed in the Ali Frazier too when they brought him into the ring, and he was looked at as an angry guy. Like he was mean.
He was mean. He was a mean street guy. He was a mean.
So now, then to see him in the 90s as like everyone's grandpa.
Well, he found God. I mean, he became a preacher, and he got away from the sport for a long time, and he changed his life. And I think both of those were real. I don't think I don't think he was playing a part. I think that's the way he is. But regardless, in the ring, he was a killer. When he came back in the 80s and 90s, early 90s, he was an absolute monster, just knocking dudes' heads clean off.
And even that was huge.
He's also one of the heaviest punchers in heavyweight history.
Him hitting that heavy bag?
No. And he was smart. He knew what he was doing. He knew how to fight. He was way smarter than he gives credit for just because he had the ridiculous power. Foreman's a phenomenal, historic, legendary heavyweight.
I did contribute to the... The piling on.
The visceral.
I was like, this is the worst tweet I've ever heard. The worst take I've ever heard. But like, it's getting...
The vitriol. Vitriol, excuse me.
Vitriol. Like, take it easy on Ade. Like he isn't like brand new to boxing. He hasn't been around forever.
Yeah.
He's doing his best. Just
we got to figure out a way, Dan, that we got to... How can we get the new generation not to forget history? Because I've been in these gyms, you know, for 20 years now, and these kids don't know... The generation right before them, let alone 70s.
Mayweather?
Basically, it's crazy, and like I mean, like good fighters. Like
I think it's more than just a boxing thing. I just think that generation doesn't know history of anything.
Yeah,
they don't know.
TikTok brains don't go back that far.
Well, TikTok is probably the best way for you to learn about stuff like that. Like if
I need to start a TikTok boxing history channel,
in your seat with your cigar. Let me tell you the story of
that would blah, be pretty blah, cool, blah. Actually. I have a smoker's jacket sit there.
Highly edited.
Back in the 70s. Let's go way back. 50s. Okay.
I just think, not to get all unk here, I just think like today's 20-year-olds or teenagers, they just don't care about the past.
No,
as much as we did.
Yeah, but it's funny. Like even Shakur, he had that take where he was like, "Yo, man, I didn't realize that Marvin Hagler was this good." It was like, "Wow, come on,
dude!"
And then,
like, we called him out on it. And he's like, "Of course, I knew who he was."
Yeah, okay.
Say you didn't. That's all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, revisionist history. But anyway, we I don't know. I think I need to work on that. I got a friend who's like he is a savant in terms of boxing. Like you can tell him a location and a year. And he'll tell you which fight it was, or the other way around. You ask him, all right, they fought, you know, when Sonny Liston and Ali, their first fight, were, you know, he'll rattle it off. Maybe I'll do a show with him, do a little TikTok channel.
You don't have to be like too deep, you know, like a lot of these kids know Tyson, but do they know like Riddick Bowe? Do they know Evander Holyfield? Do they know the supporting
But do they also know that these guys fought in the amateurs? Do they know Lennox Lewis was, you know.
When's the movie coming out?
Yeah. That's another
thing. Fight for 84. Like when's it coming out?
I don't know. Couldn't tell you. They know that's above my pay grade, bud.
It's in what's it? Post production.
It's in post production editing.
I think it's like, didn't they say it was the fall this year?
I don't know.
November?
I don't know.
All right.
When I know y'all are know. Probably you guys are you guys will probably know before me.
That's gonna reach a lot of people. I mean, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, they called my nephew back in to do some voiceover work, so they're obviously still doing the pre production stuff.
Yeah, Fight for 84, a movie that Chris was a part of last summer and fall.
A year ago.
Going to be on Netflix, Jamie Foxx.
Yep, I trained the actors, wrote the fight scenes, and I play I have a guest cameo as a Moroccan referee.
That's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that. Moses Atama, Filip Hrgović
will
be fighting next week in London, is now for the vacant IBF title. Frank Sanchez took step-aside money in order to face the winner. And now Moses Atama makes his bid to become the second youngest heavyweight champion outside of Mike Tyson at 21 years old. I expect him to beat Hrgović.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Not mad at it. Very cool. Big step up. My issue is that the slope just got slicker. This is a very...
With him being a champion?
Yeah, because Frank Sanchez is no joke. You go from Hrgović, which is a big step up too. Hrgović is no joke. I agree with you. I see Talma handling Hrgović, but like it is a step up and is a dangerous fight because Hrgović can punch. But then going right to Frank, which is another step up in a different way, in every way from Hrgović. Listen, when you're a champion, there's no more building. That's the thing. You got a strap. The building phase is over.
Yeah.
He's going to be a 21-year-old world champion, and he is there for all the smoke at this point. So
do you think, like, if he was the champ at 21, if he wasn't a champion at 21, he beats Hrgović, this fight was never supposed to be a title fight, and it is now. But then they give him Sanchez next.
I would grit my teeth even that. I think that would be... Yeah, yeah. No, I think
you know
Frank,
what I mean? It's like, were they gonna feed him a Sanchez level next anyway?
Frank just destroyed Richard Torres. I wanted to see Torres and Atalma, so we can move on
about Sanchez and sparring this past weekend that he was getting pieced up. Not Sanchez, Torres.
That Torres was getting pieced up? He's back sparring after the fight?
No, like in the lead up to the Sanchez.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, listen.
I wish I would have been told that like beforehand.
It doesn't, but Dan, I would tell you it doesn't matter. I've seen Kovalev get pieced up in sparring and they go out and blast a guy out in three rounds.
Like, well, he was probably drunk.
I've seen Joe Smith get pieced up by Will Rosinski, and then when they fight, Joe is
Will Rosinski
dominant.
Saw him. He's got a documentary out.
Yeah, Will's an awesome guy. Very, very awesome guy. Good fighter.
FDNY now.
Yep. Has been for quite some time now. Very, very good fighter. He won the Golden Gloves, what, 4 or 5 times? Something crazy like that?
Yeah.
He was good.
Yeah, so Atama, Hrgović, which I think is going to be an awesome fight. I do like Atama inside 6 rounds. I think he's too fast. I think Hrgović is so plodding. Good fighter. Just so slow.
Slow starter, too.
I think the speed, we're going to be like, holy shit, Atama's so fast.
Yeah, the speed is really the difference.
The 28th.
But it's going to come down. Listen, Hrgović has a lot of experience.
29.
And if he can set some traps, because timing beats speed. Going back to George Foreman, one of the brilliant things that he said.
29th.
So, yeah, 29th is the same night as our Pro Box show with Lester Martinez. good, a lot of boxing.
It's also the same night as the MVP, Meyer versus Chantel Cameron.
Also good fight.
A lot of boxing that night.
Good weekend of fights.
Yeah, I like that. Because it's been a little slow. Like, we took this time off in, like, probably the
it's midsummer, best dude. Time. The world
slows
down.
I know, but, like, once again, was in Orlando working. Scott Nicholson's with MVP now. She
saw
came
that.
To the, she came to the photo shoot.
Which is good. There's a lot of good fights there. I feel like at this point, like with Matchroom teaming up with MVP, you got to get your ladies the best fights, because Matchroom has a lot of very good talented fighters. To get the best fights in the world, which is a very small talent pool with the ladies, you gotta combine forces.
No, I thought it was really smart for Matchroom and MVP.
MVP has shown that they're willing to work with everybody.
You see this PFL merger. I got a lot of information on that this past weekend. Being with MVP. It's just going to be called MVP next year. It's not going to be called PFL. It's MVP MMA.
So they're absorbing it.
Absorbing it. They're taking in like all of our marketing, our social team. We're taking in 400 plus MMA fighters.
They have that many on their roster?
I believe so, yeah. They're doing MMA events, MVP MMA events with the MVP belt next year. Like, it's going to be crazy. Don't have a broadcast home yet. Obviously, they're looking at Netflix. I think that was a big reason why PFL wanted this. It's a good merger. It's a good joining of forces, if you think about it. Like, PFL has the fighters, but they don't have, like, the cool marketing, and their brand has fallen off a little bit.
And the network.
And MVP's got the network connections. They have Jake Paul promoting it, hate it or love him. They have an unbelievable marketing team and an unbelievable messaging behind it.
It's puzzle pieces. It's a puzzle piece. I got what you need. You got what I need. Let's team up. Very smart.
Yeah. So I got a crash course this past week on hearing about what next year is going to be like. A lot of MMA events. Still MVPW. They want some of the women boxers to potentially get into the cage. They want some of the MMA fighters to get into boxing. Dakota Decheva,
she's good. She's really.
I interviewed her. She is tall and she is really good. And yes. She keeps breaking her hands though. She broke her hands again. For the second time in, I think, as many fights. Both hands, bro. I felt so bad for her. The Uncrowned just did a documentary on her. It's out right now on the Ariel's YouTube page. She fought two weeks ago, at UBS Arena here on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Had a great performance. Broke her hands again. Both hands. When I went to go shake her hand at the pool, she's like, I'm sorry, I can't shake my hands are broken.
Dan, you don't know the rule. When you meet fighters, you don't shake.
Really?
That's why you knuckle, because our hands are sore, literally.
I just watched her dominate. I thought she was fine. No, she was at the pool with her mom. No cast, son.
Don't shake fighters' hands. That's why you knuckle them up. That's why we do that. Our hands are sore.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind next time.
So I had notoriously bad hands during my career. Broke both my hands multiple times. Never at the same time. So, but my right hand was always really, really bad in my thumb. I used to have a trick. So people watching at home, for you fighters who are watching at home, when you got sore hands, when you shake someone's hand, you put your two fingers middle of your hand so they can't squeeze it too hard. So when you shake, you go thumb to thumb and the thumb meet, and you take your pinky and your ring finger and you put it inside. It keeps people from being able to squeeze your hand too hard.
Have you done that to other people?
Where? What?
Have you tried that?
That's what I used to always shake people's hands with. I still do. Don't squeeze my fucking hand.
I feel like if someone did that to me, I'd be like, yo, what is going on? Like, why?
Yeah, it feels weird. It keeps people from, because it's weird. You get two knuckles hit you in the middle of your hand, and you're like, and you don't squeeze for
a second. Is that some secret boxing handshake that I don't know about? Some fraternity that you guys are in?
I developed that when my hands were sore from,
it's pretty smart.
10 years of my life. 10 years of my life, my hands hurt, so.
That's crazy. Did not know that. That's it from the heavyweights. No. BS. We're into the BS section of the podcast.
We started with the BS. Now we got more BS. There's probably more BS later, too, because there's a lot of BS going on these days.
Fury AJ is likely headed to Madison Square Garden, November 20th, Friday night, Netflix. Can't say I'm surprised. Netflix got their mitts into this. They're financing this with Turkey. They do not care. That's not the right term. They look at boxing events different. They look at boxing events differently than traditional boxing promoters.
They don't care about the culture.
No, traditional boxing promoters would have put this fight at Wembley, summertime, Saturday night, That's it. That's cut and dry. It's pretty damn obvious. Netflix looks at these events different. They look at these events like a corporate retreat. I put a video out on this to give people like a primer or give people like a heads up on what Netflix is all about. Like, obviously, they want the event to be great. They want to serve the boxing fans or as many as they can. But they also want it to be successful, and they want to show off all the stuff that Netflix has. They want to show off, well, we have this show, we have this entity, cross-promote. And then also they want to have big-time parties, and they want to have these events. Like, when I was at Tyson Paul 2 years ago, it was like 300 Netflix employees there. There were parties around the clock. There were all sorts of meetings and all sorts of gatherings and all sorts of corporate stuff going on. And what better place to do that than in New York City? It's a better place to do it than in Wembley in December. And also, they want the fight at an Eastern time. They think, Netflix thinks, if we put the fight on Eastern time zone, it's going to bring in more subscribers than it would doing it at like 3, 4 p.m. Eastern time, which would be prime time Wembley. So that's kind of like the thought process. Obviously, it's horrible. Like, I don't agree with it at all. But that's why when Netflix is involved, this is Netflix. This isn't DAZN. They are an entertainment brand.
Number one, not being at Wembley is an absolute travesty. Number two, New York ain't it. This shows you how corporate greed doesn't care about people, because New York is just too damn expensive. We got two Brits fighting, two superstar Brits. And the Brits come. They'll come. They're going to fly over. That's just the way they are. They're diehard fans. They will fly all over. The amount of money you're going to have to spend flying into New York City and staying in New York City, because they don't come for a day or two. They come for a week. That's how the Brits roll. And they drink and they party and they. So you got all. It's going to be so expensive for all these fans to do in New York. Why are we not going to Vegas? You can get East Coast time in Vegas. We do it all the time. Come to Vegas. The Brits love Vegas. The Brits will stay in Vegas. Vegas is so much cheaper. There's so much more to do. Vegas.
Netflix is like, all right, if we're not going to do it at Wembley because we don't want that time zone, we can hype up MSG as, you know, Ali fought here, Ali Frazier. It's the world's most famous arena.
You already said they don't care about the culture, so why would they do that? That makes no
sense.
Well,
they don't. Like, it's not their number one priority. They do care in some regard. They want to put on a good event.
I don't think so.
They want it to show up, but like,
the amount of money, but also the taxes. Let's talk corporate. Taxes in New York. Why would you go to New York? No, but why don't they care about that?
I don't know. I think it's more about where can they serve their entire company? Where can they serve everything? Where can we cross promote? Where can we throw events? Where can we?
Vegas is the easiest place to throw events possible, and it's so much.
Vegas would be a second. Vegas, yeah, I'm a little surprised it's not Vegas. Like, I think the New York part.
I think New York makes no sense.
Did MSG, maybe MSG bid on it. Maybe MSG is putting up a site fee. Maybe MSG wants it.
Another thing is, I am actually going to take the PTSD that Anthony Joshua has at MSG.
Shit, I didn't even think of that.
Is real. So, I'm literally going to change my percentage of who's going to win the fight based on it being in New York City.
Well, he gets knocked out even quicker, AJ.
What's that?
Gets knocked out even quicker now, AJ.
No, but I'm just saying, like, if I'm going one way, like, say I'm 60-40 Tyson, which is probably about right where I'm at.
Yeah.
Same. You now we put it in New York City. I'm 65 Tyson, 70-30 Tyson. Like, I think that AJ's such a mental guy, and putting him back there, the ghosts and demons that live there and for him. Bad idea.
Definitely going to need a different dressing room. Because if you go back and watch that fight, they have the camera on the door where they thought AJ was supposed to come out at a certain time. And remember, that door just did not open.
Yeah.
And what I heard,
It was ominous.
Never get the full story. Maybe we'll get it after AJ retires. He always said he'd tell the full story. But I don't know. I heard some crazy stuff that was going on behind that door. Like, he didn't want to make the walk.
I heard crazy stuff.
His dad didn't want him to do it.
Weeks prior to that fight.
His dad didn't want him to go out. Eddie was fighting with AJ's dad.
Dude, I was there. I fought on the card. I was behind the scenes for all of that. Dude, he was super late to the weigh-in. They both were. Like,
well, he got rocked in sparring.
I've been rocked in sparring, too, right before fights, too. It's part of the game. It happens. But
The demons.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, it was crazy because, like, you know, we all had to make weight. They're heavyweights. They don't have to make weight. We waited for so long on the stage waiting for the weigh-in. And there was like 10,000 people there to watch the weigh-in.
And he almost still won the fight.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he started out great.
Third round. Ruiz went down first.
Wicked shot.
Has Andy been down before? I think he has been down. But I think he has been, or since then, I think he has been down. But Andy's got a good chin.
Yeah, he was going down a lot. He went down against Ortiz.
Was it
went down against Areola?
Yeah, Areola. But that was all after AJ. I don't think he went down before Areola.
Oh, yeah. So that should be announced very soon, Friday night, because Netflix does not like to go up against college football. They like to have their own night. Listen, bro, this fight has completely went off the rails. Like, it's been an absolute dumpster fire the moment they tried to make it. Between the Fury getting in the ring after and not having AJ come in, weren't on the same page, to now Hearn, Dana White, Turkey all jockeying for this fight, to it not being at Wembley, to the disaster that was 2 weekends ago where Joshua was down in the first round. Fury looks horrible and whatever.
My voice just came back from that.
In terms of like the buildup for this fight couldn't go any worse.
Yeah, but honestly, on one of the one of our boxing scene shows the other day, it was me, Paulie, and Robert, and we were talking about it, and we were all going back and forth. I got super excited for the fight again. I don't know. The closer we get to the fight,
we're gonna tune in, bro.
I'm not even talking about tuning in. I'm gonna be excited about it. I'm excited for the fight.
Now it's in New York, like selfishly, like.
No, I'm not going to go.
Obviously, I've been ripping this whole thing apart.
If it's in Vegas, I'll go. I'm not going to New York for it.
I was going to say, we got to have another party.
We'll have a party, yeah.
I've been ripping this event since day one. I think it represents everything that's wrong currently with the sport. But now they're like, it's going to be in New York. I was like, oh, shit. Like, down the block. IBL party, go to fight.
That's the only good thing for – that's the only reason I would refer to
it. It's very selfish, very selfish.
It's for us to do a party because
– right, our New York listeners, our East Coast listeners. I think there'll be some people flying in from this from other states.
1,000%.
Pretty big.
Driving and flying in. Yes.
Should it be at Wembley? Yes. I think we all are in agreement there. All right, lastly, this Benavidez-Opetaia-Mikulian situation. I actually had to write this out in like – boom.
I was waiting for you to explain to me what's happening here.
Like, I was back in high school. Like,
I need the Cliffs notes. Points. Yeah, it's Cliffs notes.
All right, see if I can even get this correct.
Wait, before you even get into this. Do people even know what Cliffs notes are?
The Cliff notes. That's how I got through high school.
Yeah, and I'm sure you
do. But now it's ChatGPT. You can just, like, get any answer anytime ever.
I would call you Danny Cliffs. You look like a Cliffs notes kind of guy.
Yeah, and the teachers always caught on. They're like, these are Cliff notes.
Yeah.
If you didn't read, never read the book. Like, yeah, you remember you had like 2 weeks to read the book?
So, people at home, for the non readers back in the day, guys would get Cliff's notes. And it was like notes on the book. So, you didn't have to read the book. You'd get the gist, you get the plot, you get the.
It was ChatGPT before ChatGPT.
Yes, it was written ChatGPT for kids who don't want to do their homework.
For idiots that would not want to read a, like, Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, I was a voracious reader, so I always read everything. So that was never an issue for me.
Should have read more. All right, here we go. Here's Dan's reading comprehension from this Benavidez-Opetaia-Mikulian situation. Zuffa announces a fight between Jay Opetaia, Noel Mikulian, September 12th. It is the undercard co-main event to Ryan Garcia Conor Benn. Don King says, not so fast. I'm Don King, remember me? Maintains that he has a contract with Mikulian, and they agreed to fight David Benavidez for Benavidez's two belts later this year for a reported $1 million purse. WBC felt Mikulian took too long to make that fight. They allowed Benavidez to get a mandatory shot at the Cruiserweight Champion, which is unheard of. It is very, 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 very rare that a reigning champion, who is Benavidez, WBO and the WBA, becomes a mandatory for another organization. Like, they're not even ranked in other organizations. That's the one weird thing about these sanctioning bodies. So Benavidez somehow becomes the WBC mandatory for Mikulian while having two other belts, which is just unheard of. Once WBC got wind that Mikulian was negotiating with Opetaia, they ordered the Benavidez fight. Now we wait to see how the WBC reacts with this all, because Zuffa has announced it. Mick Kilian is fighting Opetai. It's pretty clear what happened.
It's right around the corner, too.
Right around the corner. It's pretty clear what happened here, Chris. Zuffa backed up the Brinks truck, went to Mick Kilian around his, Don King, and goes, we'll pay you this amount to fight Opetai.
Yep.
It's a lot more than PBC was going to pay him to fight Benavidez. So then the WBC steps in and goes, wait, not so fast. Oh, Zuffa's going to step in here? We're going to have our WBC champion fighting for Opetai on a card with Ryan Garcia and Conor Benn, with the whole thing that's going on with WBC there. Not so fast. We're going to make our boy, Benavidez, who we're very close with, we work very closely with, make him the mandatory and put Mick Kilian in a really, really bad spot here. So Mick Kilian either chooses the money, which he should in this case, or he's going to get stripped. If he fights Opetai, he's getting stripped. So now this Opetai fight versus Mick Kilian, which is the quote-unquote IBF champion, stripped, versus the WBC champion, stripped. It's a unified stripped fight.
Stripped unification fight.
I hate the timeline we are currently living in. The cruiserweight division is just been hijacked by Zuffa and the sanctioning bodies.
It used to be illegal to go to a fighter directly around their promoter, by the way.
I will say this, though, before you jump in, Chris. I think the WBC is in the wrong here. I think they are making rules as they go. I'm siding with Zuffa, and I'm siding with Mick Kilian. I hope he fights Opetai, and I hope he gets the bag.
That's WBC doing WBC things. But Zuffa's also in the wrong. You can't go directly to a fighter and go around this promoter, which is Don King. You can't do that. Like, it's in our contracts. You cannot do that. There's no promoter who has a contract with a fighter.
Even if it's a big bag, though.
Doesn't matter. You have to go through the...
Apparently, Mick Kilian is saying that King made this deal with Benavidez without us.
So there's an argument there, too. But that's an issue between Mick Kilian and his promoter, Don. But Don is going to have grounds against Zuffa, because Zuffa went directly to Mick Kilian to make this fight. And the fight's around the corner. Poor Mick Kilian, because I've been in these situations with a lot of promoter mucking up things, like right before a fight. It's really hard to focus. Really hard to focus. I have famously fighting my promoter before the Spence fight, and fight week, all the reporters were asking me about my promotional situation, not the fight. It was horrible. It's just really, really hard to focus.
Bad enough you got to fight Primal or Spence.
Yeah, that's one thing. But listen, I fought a lot of prime studs. That's nothing new for me. But then also having to fight your promoter, who's supposed to be on your side. I'm fighting behind the lines and behind my own lines, you know, before I had to go fight, you know, a guy like that. But yeah, it's I feel bad for Mick Kilian, but at least he's making a big bag. You know, I made a big bag in that night too. But it's more than that. You want to win. Yeah, I don't know. This whole situation with Opetai and Zuffa and WBC is really coming to a head, and it's just getting uglier and uglier. Like, we need to figure this thing out.
Yeah, and I think that he's suing the IBF.
Yeah,
Opetai.
There's another. You know that Charlie Day meme with all like the red strips and lines behind the the chalkboard. That's right now what's going on with this fight. Make that meme, Dan. Make that meme. And put I don't know whose face would you put in the middle of that. Opetai, probably.
It's a lot of faces in this. Benavidez is in the middle of this. He's now probably going to fight for the vacant WBO title, WBC title against Michael Cizliak.
I would say that Benavidez is in the best position possible of anybody who's currently doing this, because he has two of the belts. He's making a ton of money. He's going to get the WBC belt no matter what. Obviously, WBC wants him to have that belt. So even a Mikalian...
That's the part that I don't like about the sanctioning bodies.
Nah, they have favorites. They play favorites. There's no question.
They play favorites.
And they don't hide it at all, which is crazy.
Like, I love the WBO, but we know the WBO works closely with Top Rank.
You know what amazes me is you have Zuffa coming in and calling you out on all the things that you do that we're talking about, but you still do it. You're just feeding your enemy ammo.
And nothing's they do it because there's no repercussions.
No, because they don't.
There's no repercussions from the WBC making David Benavidez there mandatory, because there's probably some clause in their rules that say there's like, oh, we can meet their board can meet and we can come up with a decision. And that's what they did here. But it's so clear who the two best cruiserweights right now are Benavidez and Opetai. And all this crap is going on between the sanctioning bodies, the promoters, other fighters getting trying to get in there too and get their fights too, like McLean and others. But it's all going to lead one day, hopefully, to David Benavidez fighting Joe Pitaya.
You know what the worst part
is attached to it?
You know what the worst part about all this is, Dan? These guys would fight each other tomorrow. Jai and David would fight each other tomorrow.
That's such a good fight.
It's such a good fight. And they're both good champions. They're both exactly what you want in a champion. They will fight anybody. They're very, very talented. They're the top of their weight classes, and they want the best fights. It's such a shame all the bullshit keeps good fighters who want to fight each other. Because we opened up the show with good fighters who don't want to fight each other. Now we got good fighters who want to fight each other. These other guys are using all the bullshit to not fight people. These guys are being kept from fighting each other. You got two vicious tigers in cages that are being separated by BS.
I mean, hindsight 2020, but Opataya, I just wish he didn't sign with Zuffa. Like, if he would have known that DAZN might have been throwing around, like, pretty good money.
Yeah, if he waited a year. But he'd been waiting for a long time, and they weren't moving him the way that... I get it. You make moves, whatever. But it's something that I said earlier. It's like, what happens when you deny guys like Opataya from being able to fight for titles, and now your big signing's unhappy? You don't want your big signing to be unhappy.
You got lawsuits. The Zuffa title is on the line, even though it's not really a title.
You got to pay for those lawsuits, by the way, guys. Opataya is coming out of
his pocket. I think Zuffa might. I've read somewhere. I don't know this for sure. I read that Zuffa is helping with that. They want to get his title back, which is hilarious because they famously.
So now they're spending money to get the titles back.
Until this Ali Act gets into shape, they are a regular ass promoter. Like, they're putting on title fights. Like, Ryan Garcia in main event on that night is still for the WBC title, which is hilarious. The main event is for the WBC title, but the co-main event is going to be – they're going to be stripped. McLean's going to be stripped of that title.
Yeah, but he's not being
stripped. So who are you serving,
Mauricio? He's not being stripped because of Zuffa. He's being stripped because of the fight that he's supposed to have with Benavidez. That's a whole different thing.
Well, they could
but Opataya was stripped for IBF because of being on a Zuffa card. So there's that aspect.
WBC could just not strip McLean, but then they would just go back on
They're not going to be able to do that because they probably – the deal they already have wouldn't allow for that. I get that one from the WBC.
What a mess. What a minefield. Clarissa Shields fights this weekend against Kay Scott in
a good card, by the way. It's a good card. Demetrius Salida Promotions.
Tito Mercado is on that card.
Yeah, Demetrius Salida Promotions doing a really nice job. You're not working that, are you? I'm not working that because that's a DAZN feature. So they have the DAZN guys do that one. But it's a really good card. Atif is on there. I really, really like him. Tito Mercado.
Emmanuel to go. The spoiler.
Yes, Emmanuel Togo, who is a tough, durable guy. He's kind of like, at this point of his career, he's kind of like, you know, what can you do with him kind of guy. But Tito has been blasting everyone out. He's super, super talented. Really good signing for Salida. That kid's a future star, future champion for sure. You got, like I said, Atif is on there. Clarissa has got an interesting fight, but Clarissa's Clarissa. I mean, she's the quote. Nobody's beating her. So it's a good card, top to bottom. And Clarissa, no, she's the quote. I don't see anyone beating her anytime soon. But the card's good. You've got Troy Isley, who had a really good performance his last fight. He's on there as well. So it's a pretty good top to bottom card. Demetrius Salida Promotions is doing a nice job putting some good card together. You know, Tito Mercado's on there. Atif Olbertson, he's a guy you really got to watch. He's entertaining and beyond
light
even the ring. Yeah, yeah. I mean, light 6'1", 6'3", light heavyweight, southpaw from Philly. He can really, really fight. He's a guy I really keep an eye on.
Yeah, I like that card. And Shields is like becoming like a legit ticket seller.
Yeah.
In the U.S.
I've worked.
I mean, there's not a lot of ticket sellers here in the U.S., and she's on the list. I don't care what anyone says about her, you like her or not.
Yeah, I've worked like three of her last five fights. The places are packed.
Well, Tam Thibault fought this weekend on MVPW. She's 5-0 with 4 knockouts. She now has 3 belts at middleweight.
Mm.
She beat Desley Robinson. She has the ring belt, and she has 2 of the other belts. Shields has the other ones. This is Shields' first fight at middleweight in quite some time. Like, I don't know if Thibault's exactly ready for Shields. We talk about this all the time in men's boxing. Like, if you have belts, like, you have no time to marinate. And also, women's boxing, they don't marinate fights in women's boxing. Like, Kay Scott has 6 fights. Kay Scott lost to Desley Robinson, who Tam Thibodeau just beat last weekend. So, like, if we want to entertain a Shields-Thibodeau fight, which I threw on Twitter and got a lot of traction, people are telling me, no, Thibodeau's too green. She's not ready. She has, like, 400 amateur fights, Thibodeau. Yeah. She fought in two Olympic Games. Like, it's women's boxing. There's not a lot of in there. As if Shields wants that fight, she can get it. If Shields doesn't want it, she's not going to get it. It's as simple as that. Shields, she does, has that power in women's boxing.
Yeah, that's the fight to make. I mean, listen, I don't know who's going to really challenge Clarissa. Like, that fight, Michaela Mayer is another fight they were talking about. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah, that would be Mayer moving up to 160.
Yes, the issue is the weight on that one. But I think Mayer, in terms of skills, is probably the most difficult fight for Clarissa.
That's probably way more lucrative and, like, easier to make.
Yeah, agreed.
Than Thibodeau. No one knows who Thibodeau is. Like, she's just burst
They will.
The scene.
They will.
She's so good. Guys, she's so good. She's 6 foot. She's legitimate 6 foot southpaw.
She looks like a WNBA player. She's an athlete. I'm happy that we didn't lose her to WNBA because she's a big, tall, athletic person. We got a very good fighter there.
Yeah, that's this weekend. I have to end the show on a sad note. Pritchard Colon passed away. Sad story in boxing. This is something that is a part of the sport. I know everyone doesn't want to talk about it. Traumatic brain injuries, big time part of the sport. 2015. Pritchard Colon suffered a traumatic brain injury in his fight with Terrell Williams, and from that day on was never the same. Wheelchair bound, just tough life he led from that day on. Ultimately lost his battle, and I know you had some run-ins with Pritchard and his family. Just sad, man. Just a really sad ending. It's this part of the sport that you're just like, shit, man. The sport is real.
Boxing takes no prisoners. Pritchard was a guy who came up in my era. You know, he was a guy that a little bit behind me in terms of, you know, I was already world champion by the time he was starting to make noise right before his traumatic injury. But, that one hit close to home because he was a guy that I saw down here in Miami. He was a guy I've seen many of his fights. He was a guy that I was even looking at like, oh, I might fight this guy one day because he's coming up real fast. And it's a real shame. Good family, good kid. All the runnings I've ever had with anyone around him was always very, very good. And very talented. He was good, man. He would have been a world champion. He would have been a guy that we'd be talking about. So it's a real shame, you know, that ended the way it did. But again, we sign up understanding that this is a possibility. So anyone who likes to talk shit about fighters, you should always understand that we are out there putting our lives on the line. So keep that in mind. This is not patty cakes out there. This is a combat sport. People are getting hurt and potentially die.
33 years old.
Horrible. Horrible.
That's tough. I know there were some updates like over the last couple of years. Like he was like, I wouldn't
so
say
he was what? 22. He was 22 when this happened.
Yeah.
Oh man.
That was his last fight. It was October 17th, 2015. Fairfax, Virginia. There were some updates, like he was still not verbal, but he was responding to verbal commands.
Yeah.
And then like he never got past that. Never regained his speech and all that. Brutal.
I remember when they were talking about pulling the plug in his family, it was like absolutely not.
He was a fighter through and through.
Yeah. And he did. He fought. I mean the fact that he was, 11 years like that. But
that's tough.
That's a shame.
That's tough. You're absolutely right, Chris. Don't talk shit about boxers. Don't get personal with boxes. You've got to have a problem. You know, it's a very, 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 very tough sport. I hate to end on that note, but such is life. Such is boxing. This is the sport we love. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We'll see you on Sunday.